Ish Radio. Coming up is the news.
Iran says it will take legal actions against any country or administration that was complicit in the assassination of Lieutenant General Soleimani. Palestinians hold a funeral procession for two young men killed by Israeli forces during a pre-dawn raid near the occupied West Bank city of Jenin. A senior British official says that hundreds of patients are dying every week because of delays to emergency care, calling the UK's National Health Service unsafe and undignified.
Welcome to World News here in the Iranian capital. I'm your host, Behzad Shafiq. Good to have you with us.
The top story this hour, Iran saying it will take legal action against any country or government complicit in the assassination of Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani. The head of a special committee tasked with prosecuting perpetrators says that Iran and Iraq have worked closely to collect all evidence related to the case. Abbas Ali Khatkhodai says the citizens of four countries have helped the U.S. in its assassination plot. The official said that Tehran will try to take the case to international courts once the judiciary makes its own ruling. Former U.S. President Donald Trump ordered the assassination of anti-terror icon. The U.N. Special Rapporteur on extrajudicial killings also condemned the move as a violation of international law. Tehran at teleconference dubbed General Soleimani in the New World Order on the eve of his third assassination anniversary. Senior officials attending the event called the general a symbol of international resistance. Salman Kujuri has a report.
Tehran has hosted a conference titled General Qasem Soleimani and the New World Order. Senior military and state officials attended the conference to discuss the role of Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani in the fight against terrorism and in the creation of a new world order. Addressing the conference, Major General Yahya Rahim Safavi, the top military advisor to leader of the Islamic Revolution Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, said the U.S. has made many mistakes during the past decades, one of the gravest of which was the assassination of General Soleimani in January 2020.
The martyrdom of General Qasem Soleimani triggered the creation of a new world order by the resistance front in the face of arrogant powers. The axis of arrogance led by the U.S. is projecting power through militaristic approaches as well as hybrid and media warfare, while the resistance front, spearheaded by Iran and Ayatollah Khamenei, has adopted the cultural influence strategy by using soft power and standing up to the arrogant axis.
General Soleimani was the commander of the Quds Force of the Islamic Revolution Guards Corps, IRGC. The United States assassinated him along with Abu Mahdi al-Muhandis, the deputy commander of Iraq's anti-terror popular mobilization units, and their companions in a drone strike near Baghdad International Airport on January 3, 2020.
General Qasem Soleimani was active on all fronts for nearly 30 years without interruption and without hesitation. His personality was outstanding not only in terms of decimating Daesh in Syria and Iraq, but also in sending out positive vibes and displaying courage to everyone. He was a symbol of international resistance who redefined the rules of leadership.
General Soleimani is well known for dislodging Daesh terrorists in Iraq back in 2017. He also spearheaded major operations in Syria that resulted in liberating key areas from Daesh control. Observers say by assassinating General Soleimani, the U.S. tried to resurrect the terrorists. However, they call it a miscalculation, which backfired on Washington, triggering the beginning of its exit from the region.
Although the assassination of General Qasem Soleimani put an end to his life, his legacy will continue forever, and he will remain as a role model for all resistance and anti-terrorism carriers. Salman Kujuri, Tehran.
The Iran Intelligence Ministry has reported the arrests of elements of the biggest network behind financial and material support for the operatives of the anti-Iran MKO terrorist group. The ministry said in a statement six members of the network were detained in a series of simultaneous operations in several provinces. The statement says the network hired thugs who were behind the recent riots in Iran. The network was said to be responsible for providing equipment, including weapons and explosives, to MKO operatives in Iran. It also funded the terrorists using a complex money laundering method. The ministry has cautioned the countries hosting such terrorists, including Albania, the UAE, and the Netherlands, saying their presence and activities will have consequences for them. The MKO, or MEK, has conducted numerous assassinations and bombings against Iranian civilians since the victory of the 1979 Islamic Revolution. The EU and the U.S. have dropped the group from their list of foreign terrorist organizations. Palestinians have held a funeral procession for two young men killed by Israeli forces in a pre-dawn raid near the occupied West Bank city of Jenin. Mohammed Samer Hassan, 21, and Fuad Mahmoud Ahmed Abed, 17, were fatally shot during the incursion into the village of Kafr Dan, west of Jenin. Several others were also injured. Resistance movements, Hamas and Islamic Jihad, have slammed the killings, saying this will only serve as a motivation for youths in their fight against the Tel Aviv regime. Regime forces raided the area to destroy the homes of two Palestinians involved in last year's attack on a checkpoint that resulted in the death of an Israeli officer. Regime forces blew up the houses of Abdurrahman Hani Abed and Ahmed Ayman Ibrahim Abed, who they had killed in September. Israel usually demolishes Palestinian homes, citing different pretexts, including attacks on its forces. Human rights groups condemn the Israeli policy as a collective punishment and a crime against humanity. Palestinians say that the regime's demolition drive is also aimed at grabbing more land in the West Bank. Correspondent Rama Lamona Kendall Erder joined us, and she explained why Palestinian youths have joined the fight against the Tel Aviv regime and are willing to sacrifice their lives.
The majority of the Palestinian martyrs who were killed by the Israeli forces and were identified as members of the resistance groups and mainly the newly formed resistance groups, including the so-called group Lions Den, are very young, 17, 19, 20, 25, the maximum, let's say. This proves, according to experts, that Palestinian youths, those youths who were born in the following the last intifada or during the last intifada, have seen nothing. They have seen incursions, raids, killings, Israeli atrocities, wars, hearing about the wars that had been carried out in the Gaza Strip. They are not allowed to visit Al-Quds. You can imagine that Palestinians living in the occupied West Bank are not allowed to visit Al-Quds without getting Israeli-issued permits, and it's almost impossible for Palestinians to get, especially for Palestinian males under the age of 45. So they have witnessed nothing but living under occupation. They have no dreams but to fight the Israeli forces, to bring the Israeli occupation to an end in order to live normal life. This is what they want. They want to live a normal life, but this cannot be happened as long as the Israeli occupation continues and as long as the Israeli forces go on with their atrocities and aggression against the Palestinians.
Syria's transport ministry says the Damascus International Airport has resumed operations following an hours-long interruption of services that was due to an Israeli attack. The airport was hit by a volley of air-launched missiles earlier today. Targets in southern Damascus were also struck, leaving two soldiers dead and two others wounded. This is the latest in a string of Israeli missile strikes against Syria. The regime also fired missiles at the airport in June last year. That attack caused extensive damage, leading to a two-week halt of incoming and outgoing flights. Damascus sees such attacks as a violation of its sovereignty and has lodged complaints with the UN and other international bodies. Now, we've asked our correspondent in Damascus, Mohammed Ali, how Syria has managed to develop its air defense systems through years of Israeli aggression.
The Syrian air defenses are definitely more powerful than before, especially in the recent or past couple of years, because if we look at the events, we see that almost every time Israel carries out an aggression on Syria, most of the enemy missiles are being shot down by the Syrian air defenses, of course, thanks to the Syrian army, thanks to the cooperation between Syria and Iran, Syria and Russia in developing those Syrian air defenses. There are many agreements between Syria and its allies on developing such air defenses, especially at such critical times when Israel does not stop its aggressions on Syria. Almost every couple of weeks, there is an aggression by Israel on various parts of Syria. When they carry out an aggression, especially recently, what they do is that they launch a large number of missiles, whether they're carrying out the attack via their fighter jets or from surface-to-surface missiles. Their strategy now is to launch a large number of missiles so that whenever, despite how much or the number of missiles the Syrian air defenses is able to shoot down, some of the Israeli missiles would actually hit their targets. This is definitely a clear indication that Syrian air defenses are now much more capable of shooting down those enemy missiles.
Well, it's news review time. The UK's National Health Service, NHS, appears to be in a serious crisis. A senior official says up to 500 patients are dying every week because of delays to emergency care.
We cannot continue like this. It is unsafe and it's undignified. What we're seeing now is, in terms of these long waits, is being associated with increased mortality. And we think somewhere between 300 to 500 people are dying as a consequence of delays and problems with urgent and emergency care each week.
The Boyle cited bed shortages as the root of the problem, leading to hundreds of unnecessary deaths. He said that December was the worst ever month for hospital bed occupancy and emergency care delays. The dire state of the NHS is blamed on a combination of factors such as rising COVID and flu cases, pandemic backlogs, and staff shortages. Pressure on the health service comes amid a fresh wave of strikes by nurses, paramedics, and ambulance drivers. They demand higher pay in line with soaring inflation in the country. Well, time now to see what's going on. So let's get some more accurate information and also insight. So let me invite to Robert Carter, our correspondent in London. Also with me is Rodney Shakespeare, who's professor of economics and political commentator in London. So, Rob, how serious is the problem? And definitely, this is not a, it shouldn't have dragged into the new year. It's not a proper New Year gift, is it?
No, absolutely not. And I can say from personal experience that COVID is certainly rearing its ugly head again in these colder months. I believe that myself and also my entire family came down with possibly a new variant of COVID, which is going around now. At least according to fears from the government. We've been sick over the season. A lot of other people have been sick too, it seems. And the NHS, which is already under major strain from a lack of support from the government, from various other issues, crises which are ongoing, such as a staffing shortage and things of that nature, there's been a shortage of bed spaces, long queues at the A&E services, accident and emergency, so people just haven't been able to get the care that they need, and it's cost lives. That's what these statistics are suggesting. The government has issued generic statements like they understand the pressures that the NHS is under and are with them, basically, in spirit, it seems. But ultimately, 2023, there could be another kind of wave of COVID fear over a new variant which has been going around now. And I think that there's a rise in cases in the US which are quite concerning for many onlookers. And as you can see from statistics here, people are visiting the hospitals more now, coming down with flus and COVID related sickness possibly as well. China, of course, there are measures being brought in. The government here are announcing that they're going to start implementing tests on anyone coming from China as well.
Okay. Now, Professor Shakespeare, as you know, and also well, I just mentioned in the intro, a combination of factors are to blame here, the flu, the COVID, I don't know, strikes by different sectors of society. So what's the way out of this? I mean, is the pay rise the way out, or does it require maybe an overhaul in the whole system?
There was two factors which I think ought to be really brought up. And the first is that in the hospitals, there are now many patients who could go home. They're well enough to go out of the hospital. But they need to go into care in the community, in the care homes and in the nursing homes. And that, as Robert mentioned, that is where the lack of support by the government for the care homes and the staff in those homes, that you then get this huge blockage actually in the hospitals. Then, of course, there's the other big issue, which is that the nurses are being offered, I think, somewhere between 5 and 8%, somewhere around there. And they are asking, very understandably, for around 19. And of course, 19, if it's not now, very soon will be the actual inflation rate. And it's hard to see why the nurses who got us through this COVID thing and are still getting us through the COVID thing should have to take what effectively would be perhaps a 10% pay cut for serving us in such an honorable and magnificent way. So you are looking at a big crisis in the National Health Service, and at the behind this, of course, are monstrous failures of government economic policy, which perhaps we can't go into.
Okay, thank you so much for that. Robert Carter, our correspondent, and Rodney Shakes, professor of economics and political commentator in London, with their insight and contribution. That's a wrap for this news bulletin. Goodbye.
IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Economic divide.
It's called the Inflation Reduction Act. The main purpose? To curb inflation by reducing the deficit, lower prescription drug prices, and promote investing into domestic energy production while promoting clean energy. What is the key phrase? Domestic clean energy production. Why is that important? Which has angered the EU and even South Korea? Hi, I'm Kovit Tahwe. That is what we're going to find out in this edition of Economic Divide. Coming up in this program, the Inflation Reduction Act, $430 billion, massive new green energy subsidy package. But what does it do? EU companies will suffer because of the US tax breaks. That's one of the things that it will do. Then the Inflation Reduction Act, the IRA precondition, components used in renewable energy technologies like electric cars on condition that they are made in North America. That is the problem. How is that a problem for the EU? We're going to explain that to you coming up. Also, taking a look at the EU fight back, France and Germany taking the lead to counter with an ambitious green industrial policy. But the key question is, was all of this pre-planned by the U.S.?
The COVID crisis, which began to spread globally in 2019, plus the Ukraine war, which started in 2022, have caused dramatic shifts in the economies of major global powers. The conjunctural crises have pushed countries to adopt policies that mark a shift away from globalism. One of those countries is the U.S. The trend began during the tenure of former U.S. President Donald Trump, but the same policies have more or less continued during the administration of President Biden.
The
Biden administration has adopted a more cooperative approach toward European countries, yet at the same time it has pursued its own interests at the expense of its European partners. One of those moves has been the Inflation Reduction Act, which was passed in August of 2022, just a few months into the Ukraine war. The law, as passed, will raise $738 billion and authorize $391 billion in spending on energy and climate change. Among other issues, the landmark package comprises tax credits for electric cars made in North America and supports U.S. battery supply chains. That is why it has angered Washington's European allies. European officials have expressed concern about the financial incentives offered to U.S. companies.
The U.S. President Joe Biden's Inflation Reduction Act is something that has been introduced and signed off. It took a while for him to actually get that signed off and get the approval through Congress and mostly its Democratic, I guess, lawmakers. But Americans are not exactly sure what it's going to do. That is not the focus of what we went after when we looked up some of the social media posts on this. First, however, let's take a look at what it stated that this IRA is going to do. It's going to deliver for American families, advancing the most aggressive action in terms of what it introduces on climate change, and that's a first in American history. And it will grow the economy, the U.S. economy, from the bottom up and the middle out. Okay? Now, why EU leaders are upset over Biden's Inflation Reduction Act. Goes on to say that EU leaders, when it comes to the IRA, will unfairly discriminate against European firms. That's what the IRA, according to the source, is going to do. Now, with the IRA giving generous subsidies to American businesses, the EU is now considering a subsidy program of its own. So the birth maybe of a trade war between the EU and the U.S. on this particular green energy realm. And then additionally, this article went on to say, EU wants to counter fears that the EU was a waning industrial power. Others jumped towards subsidies and protectionism to shield local industries during a recession and tough economic times. Next up, Washington is facing a backlash from its European allies. The EU, Britain, and others have voiced concerns over U.S. Inflation Reduction Act. EU considers the act discriminatory against European manufacturers. And the next entry, Inflation Reduction Act, is in clear violation of CORUS FTA. What is CORUS FTA? That's the Korean-U.S. Free Trade Agreement. This article said whereby Korean electric vehicles, or EVs, and batteries will have their tax credits denied or significantly curtailed. It is a clear violation of international trade norms. And it also says it denies tax credits of up to $7,500, which it did last month, to buyers of EVs manufactured outside of the country, as stipulated in the act. Now, this particular article that we just cited, I want to make sure that it was a website article based on what I'm reading to you, which it was. So you can see that the IRA is affecting Europe, it's affecting South Korea, and who knows how it will affect other countries that have anything to do with production, especially inside the U.S. All right, let me introduce our guest for the first segment of our Q&A. Bill Still joins us. He's an investigative journalist, an award-winning filmmaker, documentaries including The Money Masters, The Secret of Oz, and also Jekyll Island, The Truth Behind the Federal Reserve. Well, Bill Still, welcome to Economic Divide. The Inflation Reduction Act, I don't need to introduce that to you especially. You know what that is. It's supposed to be a massive new green energy subsidy package. And at the same time, what it's supposed to do is it's supposed to reduce inflation. EU countries, however, are worried that this is going to affect them because of the tax breaks that the U.S. has given in this act when it comes to, for example, renewable technologies on electric cars, for example. Can you please explain how this whole thing, what it is and how it is affecting European companies?
Well, first of all, Biden's Inflation Reduction Act is a joke here in the United States. It's not reducing inflation. In fact, it's doing just the opposite by providing huge amounts of money to Biden's friends and political supporters. It not only enriches them, which is a short-term policy, but long-term greatly weakens the long-term prosperity prospects of the United States.
Okay, that's what Bill Still thinks about the Inflation Reduction Act. So much for what Biden said is working from the bottom up. Next guest is Martin Seif. He's a former managing editor, international affairs, and former chief news analyst for United Press International, better known as UPI. Now, he has covered Washington policy making and politics for 37 years for UPI and the Washington Times. Martin Seif, welcome to Economic Divide. We have this $430 billion IRA, Inflation Reduction Act. It's a massive green energy subsidy package. At the same time, it's supposed to bring down inflation. It has other purposes that it serves, especially for the U.S. domestically. But it also is creating this schism between the EU and the U.S. because EU countries are worried that the incentives here that are green energy related is going to entice factories in the EU to actually move into the U.S. Can you please explain how this whole thing is going to happen and whether this is true? And do Europeans actually have something to worry about?
It's a very difficult situation indeed, as you will gather. The United States, in practice, did allow for many years, even decades, liberal imports of technology from Europe and, of course, especially of advanced engineering from Italy, Germany, France. And this was greatly to the advantage of the United States, whose own industrial base was decaying in those areas. But what we now see is different imperatives are conflicting with each other. As you rightly pointed out, the European fears are correct ones. At the very time when their own energy costs are soaring, precisely because they are following the US lead in both energy policies and trying to punish Russia with economic sanctions, and therefore, and of course, Russia is a major oil, global natural gas and oil exporter. So global prices are soaring. Europe is suffering on this much more than the United States because the United States produces enough oil and natural gas, so it has been curtailing it because of these very same green environmental policies. The green environmental policies, however, are causing energy prices to rise in the United States too. And Biden is trying to offset this, the Biden administration, by generating more jobs in the so-called green economy. The problem is the green economy is not cost effective. It works, but it is expensive. Green energy is not cheap energy. If you want cheap energy in the world, you have to go to oil and natural gas. You cannot change the laws of physics and therefore of economics. And that is what they are trying to do.
We've reached the info news section of the program where we cover economic news from around the world. First up, this concerns Russia and Iran in terms of trade between the two countries. Major Russian bank has launched a new service inside the Islamic Republic. Individuals and businesses in both countries can now be able to conduct cross-border transactions. What does that mean? It will allow money to be sent between those two countries using account details within one day. So that is very important, how that is contributing to expediting the money transaction that takes place. Next up, taking a look at the U.S. effort to try to gain Africa and obviously its trade in terms of relationship overall. It's using Africa, however, as a stepping stone against China. That's the bad part. Washington's multi-billion dollar investment pledge, which it has done, only exists because African nations are needed to, according to the U.S., counter Beijing's influence. Now, the U.S. has accused its rival of employing so-called debt traps, in reference to China, and other expansionist policies across the African continent. South Korea is our next topic in terms of how the economy is doing there, and this is something that is very worrying because the country has warned of deepening economic slump. South Korea, Asia's fourth largest economy, is widely expected to see growth fall below 2% next year. The reason that is gives the effects from a global economic slump. So watch out, South Korea. And, of course, South Korea imports the products from around the to many countries around the world, so that's not good news also for those on the receiving end. Taking a look at Peru, which is our next topic, and the political crisis in that country, this is something that's very worrying. An apparent coup has taken place. However, now the U.S. is being blamed for it. CIA agent turned U.S. ambassador met with the defense minister of Peru one day before the president was overthrown. This goes back to now roughly about 2 weeks, but we thought that it's worthy of highlighting it. Now, one day before that coup, the name of that U.S. Ambassador, Kenna, met with Peru's defense minister. The defense minister then ordered the military to turn against Castillo. Why did we pick this? Because all of this was politics and nothing in terms of the economy. Well, a couple reasons. Peru is filled with natural resources, and also because the president, Castillo, which we can't call him a former president yet, was responsible for bringing in this view of trying to elevate the economic status of the indigenous people. Sound familiar? That's something that happened in Bolivia. Anyways, this is going to be the topic of one of our upcoming programs. Please tune in for that. That does it for our coverage of the four topics we had for our InfoNews section.
Listening to Economic Divide. The series looks at the financial health of the economies around the world and its impact on countries. You can listen to Economic Divide on Mondays and Tuesdays on IRIB English Radio.
Time now for the in-depth section of the program. Now, listening to the U.S. President Joe Biden on the Inflation Reduction Act, you would think that America has single-handedly rescued the world from things like inflation or climate change or corporate greed, for that matter. But that is not the case, and Europe is finding this out the hard way through its money purse. Okay, first off, high natural gas prices. They are pushing European manufacturers to shift to the U.S. Now, this we figured we'd just give to you as a statement. The Ukraine war is driving up energy costs in Europe, while relatively stable prices and green energy incentives, well, they're luring companies to the U.S. That is basically what has occurred in terms of the crisis that Europe is experiencing. Now, in terms of the industries from Europe that are relocating to the U.S., three ran at the top of the list. You have the steel industry, you have factories that produce fertilizers, and also factories that produce feedstocks. These, by the most, compared to other industries, use a lot of energy. And I mean a lot. Now, for the doubters about the high EU energy costs that I was talking about and why EU factories are concluding that it is best to perhaps relocate to the U.S., Europe's energy crisis, cumulative cost will be around $1 trillion. Not good news for Europe. These high prices will last actually for years. And there will be no relief until the year 2026. Well, as such, EU gas prices will be five times more expensive than in North America. Now, in the meantime, the true colors of the IRA have come to light, which has made the EU balk at these green energy prospects. And that is the plan that dictates that the components used in renewable energy technologies, like electric cars, are in the condition that they are made in North America. So there you go. That's the big whammy that the Europe is finding out the hard way. Let me have our guest rejoin us for a breakdown. Bill Still, investigative journalist and award-winning filmmaker, rejoins us. Bill Still, welcome back to Economic Divide. Taking a look at what is occurring here, we have France and Germany who are hoping Europe to boost efforts to develop this ambitious, as they call, green industrial policy. But the paper that they've proposed has four objectives in it. At the same time, when energy is so expensive and it's so scarce in Europe, and in terms of even having factories that are struggling to get it, how can Europe even think of going green, let alone develop a green plan in order to counter the U.S.'s Inflation Reduction Act?
All I can say is things are not as they seem right now. The United States is in such a chaotic situation because of the Biden administration is so corrupt that what appears on the surface is usually the truth is just the opposite. Biden doesn't care what it does to Europe. Whatever weakens Europe relative to China will become the Biden policy objectives until he leaves office. What your audience may not realize is that the U.S. under Biden has become much more autocratic, even dictatorial.
All right. Bill still thinks Biden is dictatorial. Let me reintroduce Martin Saif, former managing editor in international affairs and former chief news analyst for United Press International, to see what he thinks. Martin Saif, welcome back to Economic Divide. So far, in terms of the U.S. response, it has been open in terms of the IRA vis-a-vis Europe to amend some of the clauses, tweak maybe the Inflation Reduction Act overall. Analysts are warning that Europe is actually going through a deindustrialization process, like Germany, at the top of the list. All the U.S. can do now is to come up and say, okay, maybe we can tweak it. The question needs to be asked is, was the U.S. actually aware when writing the Inflation Reduction Act, that this is what it would do to Europe? Was that pre-planned, do you think?
This is an extremely important question, and I think there is no straightforward answer. I think there are a number of key policymakers who were very well aware of the inherent contradiction here. You are absolutely correct. But from my own years of interacting with policymakers and covering the policy debates on Capitol Hill, I would say that a large number of legislators on both sides of the House, both Democrats and Republicans, and think much more Democrats than Republicans, believe so passionately in green energy. I think that even insofar as American policymakers were aware they were putting Europe at a disadvantage, they had no idea what the catastrophic cumulative effects were going to be. They had no idea of the economic avalanche and catastrophe they were triggering in Europe. As you rightly say, Europe is now on a road to deindustrialization and the worst winters its Western European populations have experienced in well over 75 years, since 1945 to 1947, immediately after World War II. This is very serious. It is going to get much worse. And I do not think the American policymakers even now realize the extent of the economic catastrophe which they are helping bring about in Europe.
Now mounting concerns about the package not only in Europe but also in Asia. Among European leaders, there's the fear that the continent was a waning industrial power, sticking to free and open trade ideals, while others jumped towards subsidies and protectionism to shield local industries during a recession and tough economic times. There are disagreements among European leaders about how to counter the U.S. moves. In essence, the EU is worried about potential new trade barriers on European electric vehicle producers. Fears are that disagreements could lead to a trade war and weaken the United stance over the war in Ukraine. Is now considering subsidies to give emerging green technology companies enough seed money to develop in a competitive global market. The main challenge is that such funds are spread equitably across the bloc. The concern is that wealthy and technology-savvy nations like Germany and the Netherlands would be the only ones to thrive, and the EU is not the only one that is concerned. South Korea, for instance, has also brought up the same concern. The policy adopted by the Biden administration could worsen the already tense trade war between the U.S. and China.
There are many negatives when it comes to the Inflation Reduction Act. This is what we will be covering in this segment of the program. First, the White House claimed that the Inflation Reduction Act would cut the deficit by hundreds of millions of dollars in order to reduce inflation. Not only will that not happen, now we learn that was apparently never the plan. The White House insisted that the IRA would in fact bring inflation down because the massive climate and clean energy spending in the law was offset by even larger tax increases, which purportedly reduced the federal budget deficit by $275 billion. And as the White House explained in a fact sheet, reducing the deficit will help fight inflation. Even the so-called reduction, it is minuscule. It is said that it would reduce inflation by around 0.1 percentage points by the middle of the first decade. Now, the White House admits that it never intends to use that $275 billion to curb inflation. The intent was to spend it. In fact, Biden did so almost immediately after signing the Inflation Reduction Act into law. Within days, he announced his massive student loan forgiveness, a plan that will cost between $605 billion and $1 trillion. While the nonpartisan Congressional Budget Office outs the price tag at about $400 billion.
Using the authority Congress granted the Department of Education, we will forgive $10,000 in outstanding federal student loans. In addition, students who come from low-income families, which allowed them to qualify to receive a Pell Grant, will have their debt reduced $20,000. Working and middle-class people hit especially hard during the pandemic, making under $125,000 a year. You make more than that, you don't qualify.
Another problem with the Inflation Reduction Act is in clear violation of KORUS FTA, the Korea-U.S. Free Trade Agreement, in reference to South Korea. South Korea states that the electric vehicles, EVs, and batteries will have their tax credits denied or significantly curtailed by the U.S. It says that it's a clear violation of international trade norms. The U.S. Inflation Reduction Act also breaches international trade rules, another point that was raised by the EU, similar to the concern of South Korea. The EU is worried about potential new trade barriers on European electric vehicle producers, just like South Korea. The Director General of the World Trade Organization has said that countries need to be very careful that whatever policies they are taking should not be discriminatory and should not favor domestic goods in reference to the U.S. I'm Mahdi Abbasian, and it's the end of this segment of the program.
We have learned in this program, at least, that the Inflation Reduction Act, as the name indicates, should reduce inflation. That's the minimum it can do. But it does not even do that. Now, there are two serious points, however, that needs to be addressed in conclusion. One of them is the fact that you have the U.S. Fortune 500 companies and conglomerates who are going to be the real winners of this Inflation Reduction Act. And the biggest losers? EU countries. How will the EU counter the IRA and believe that they will win in this? Well, it's going to be very interesting to see how that's going to happen, because when and if that happens, there's going to be a divergence when it comes to the EU-US relationship, and that will be affected, and we have to wait and see what will happen. That is for this edition of the program. We really enjoyed having you with us. For Mikko Vetari and the team, it's goodbye until the next Economic Divide.
Ocean of Dua.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين. ثم الصلاة والسلام على سيدنا محمد وآله الطاهرين. Hello everyone, brothers and sisters. I am Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi with you with another edition of the program, The Ocean of Dua. In this edition of the program, we'll have a glance at Kumail's supplication and we'll discuss a commentary on that. We'll be back in a few seconds, so stay tuned.
إلهي وسيدي فأسألك بالقدرة التي قدرتها وبالقضية التي حتمتها وحكمتها وغلبت من عليه أجريتها أن تهب لي في هذه الليلة وفي هذه الساعة كل جرم أجرمته وكل ذنب أذنبته.
Dear listeners, we have reached this excerpt of the Divine Kumail Supplication. وَكُلَّ سَيِّئَةٍ أَمَرْتَ بِإِثْبَاتِهَا الْكِرَامَ الْكَاتِبِينَ الَّذِينَ وَكَّلْتَهُمْ بِحِفْظِ مَا يَكُونُ مِنِّي وَجَعَلْتَهُمْ شُهُودًا عَلَيَّ مَعَ جَوَارِحِي. And every evil act which you have commanded the noble writers to record, those whom you have appointed to watch over every action of mine, and whom you have made, along with my limbs, witness against me. This is how Imam Ali alayhi salam puts into word the continuation of the request in the previous parts. أَنْتَهَبَ لِي فِي هَذِهِ اللَّيْلَ وَفِي هَذِهِ السَّاعَةِ. I ask you to forgive at this hour, at this night, every offense I have committed. كُلَّ جُرْمٍ أَجْرَمْتُهُ كُلَّ ذَنْبٍ أَذْنَبْتُهُ أَخْفَيْتُهُ أَوْ أَظْهَرْتُهُ كَتَمْتُهُ أَوْ أَعْلَنْتُهُ. Until Imam reaches this sentence. وَكُلَّ سَيِّئَةٍ أَمَرْتَ بِإِثْبَاتِهَا الْكِرَامَ الْكَاتِبِينَ. I ask you to forgive those evil acts which you have commanded those noble writers to record. The recording of human deeds by the two writer angels, as well as the limbs being witnesses for the human behavior, are facts that are mentioned in the Holy Quran and the traditions. وَجَعَلْتَهُمْ شُهُودًا عَلَيَّ مَعَ جَوَارِحِ. You have appointed to watch every action of mine, and you have made them, along with my limbs, witnesses against me. The Holy Quran states, وَإِنَّ عَلَيْكُمْ لَحَافِذِينَ كِرَامًا كَاتِبِينَ يَعْلَمُونَ مَا تَفْعَلُونَ. Most surely there are keepers over you. كِرَامًا كَاتِبِينَ, honorable records. يَعْلَمُونَ مَا تَفْعَلُونَ, they know what you do. The Holy Quran elsewhere states, حَتَّى إِذَا مَا جَاءُهَا شَهِدَ عَلَيْهِمْ سَمْعُهُمْ وَأَبْصَارُهُمْ وَجُلُودُهُمْ بِمَا كَانُوا يَعْمَلُونَ. Until they come to it, their ears, their eyes, and their skins shall bear witness against them as to what they did. This is explicitly stating the fact that the limbs of the human body are witnesses against him in the day of hereafter. And they even talk to them. وَقَالُوا لِجُلُودِهِمْ لِمَ شَهِدْتُمْ عَلَيْنَا. They should say to their skins, why have you borne witness against us? قَالُوا أَنْتَقَنَا اللَّهُ الَّذِي أَنْتَقَ كُلَّ شَيْءٍ. And they answer, they shall say, Allah, who makes everything speak, has made us speak.
My Lord, my Master, I therefore implore you by the power which you determine, and by the decree which you have finalized and ordained, where you have prevailed, you have imposed it to bestow upon me this night and this very hour the forgiveness for all the transgressions that I have been guilty of. for all the sins that I have committed, for all the ugly acts that I have kept secret, and for all the evils done by me, secretly or openly.
Now that we're here, feeling so good about all the things that we went through, knowing that God is pleased with us too. It's not a dream, this is so true. Feeling the peace all around, seeing things we can never imagine, hearing the sound of rivers flow, and we know we'll be here forever. The feeling is indescribable, knowing that this is our reward.
The ocean of dua. So in this part of the Qumayyah supplication, Imam Ali alayhi salam is mentioning the fact that there are two writer angels, as well as the limbs, that are witnesses for the human behavior. And this is what has been stated as fact in the Holy Quran and in our traditions. The Holy Quran states, يَوْمَ تَشْهَدُ عَلَيْهِمْ أَلْسِنَتُهُمْ وَأَيْدِيهِمْ وَأَرْجُلُهُمْ بِمَا كَانُوا يَعْمَلُونَ. On the day when their tongues, their hands, and their feet shall bear witness against them as to what they did. And this is really interesting, because it proves that on the day of justice, on the day of hereafter, the human beings, they are not even owners of their own limbs. They're not even owning their own body parts, because they are testifying, there are witnesses against them. تَشْهَدُ عَلَيْهِمْ أَلْسِنَتُهُمْ وَأَيْدِهِمْ وَأَرْجُلُهُمْ. And this shows that our body parts and our limbs are aware of our actions, because being witness means you must be aware of something happening. You must have seen, heard, or felt something happening. And we understand that these body parts are cognizant of whatever we do with them, whether we are aware of that or not. That is why the Almighty Allah says elsewhere, الْيَوْمَ نَخْتِمُ عَلَىٰ أَفْوَاهِهِمْ وَتُكَلِّمُنَا أَيْدِيهِمْ وَتَشْهَدُ أَرْجُلُهُمْ بِمَا كَانُوا يَكْسِبُونَ. On that day, we will set a seal upon their mouths, and their hands shall speak to us, and their feet shall bear witness of what they earned. This means that their body parts are not in control of them, and they are independently bearing witnesses against them. Thank you for staying with us, dear listeners, in this episode as well. We ask the Almighty Allah to set us among the guided ones and the people of the straight path. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Thank you, dear listeners of IRIB English, for listening to us. If you have any question regarding our programs, feel free to email us at englishradio@irib.ir. Also visit our website at parsetoday.ir. Until the next program, take care and goodbye.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1920 to 2020 UTC on the following frequencies. Shortwave 49 meters, 6,040 kilohertz for Europe, and 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz for Southern Africa, and FM 91.5 megahertz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat or Bat 5, and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.